fourth case for argument this morning is in the matter of Buffet. Mr. Bonish.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Philip Bach, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellants. Chapter 7 of the Bankruptcy Code promises a fresh start for individual bankrupts, and it does so by discharging pre-petition debts upon the entry of the discharge order. Section 362, upon the filing of the petition, prohibits and stays the collection of pre-petition debts, and Section 524 enjoins the collection of pre-petition debt after the injunction order is entered. Defendants were plaintiff's bankruptcy counsel for their Chapter 7 petitions. Defendants performed pre-petition work, creating pre-petition claims for payment, but didn't collect those payments. Instead, they waited until after the petitions were filed and after the discharge orders were entered to then collect from their clients.
Was the fee paid in installments here, the filing fee?
I believe the filing fees, Your Honor, were paid up front by all three of the plaintiffs. It's only the pre-petition attorney fees that we're talking about being paid in installments through, I believe, deductions from their pay from their employers after the discharge. By collection
pre-petition fees, is it clear that there are no fees for services after the petition's filing date?
Our complaint limited the claim to pre-petition fees for pre-petition work. And I don't know whether there was post-petition work, but I would say that...
It would be a rare bankruptcy case with no post-petition work.
I think, Your Honor, we would agree that the defendants are entitled to payment for post-petition work.
On what basis? As the bankruptcy judge pointed out, it's the contract is the debt, and it's the debt that's subject to discharge. So if this is covered by the normal discharge rule, presumably the lawyers can't be paid for post-petition work either.
Correct. With respect to the bankruptcy judge, I disagree, and I think that the Ninth Circuit was right
Circuit did not purport to interpret the bankruptcy code. The Ninth Circuit opinion was quite explicit that it was legislating because it didn't agree with the statute Congress had enacted. And perhaps they do those things on the West Coast that way, but we don't do it that way here.
I don't think Your Honor would have to legislate the bankruptcy code to say that pre-petition debts are discharged. And the question of whether people can collect post-petition fees isn't an issue in this case. But if it were, I would say that they have a right to be paid for the work they do after the petition is filed on some quantum merit basis
is this reconciled with the bankruptcy code?
I don't think the bankruptcy code itself creates the right to collect attorney fees. I think the attorney fees are derived from state
attorney
law.
Attorney fees are collected under a contract, and the contract at issue in this case predates the bankruptcy, and therefore one would think, as Judge Barley had observed, that either everything is discharged or nothing is discharged. But the line drawn by the Ninth Circuit, which, as I say, conceded that it was legislating because it didn't agree with what Congress had enacted, is the one impossible thing to come out of this. And to the extent you've now decided to argue for the Ninth Circuit's line, it seems to me there's some quicksand here.
I don't agree with the bankruptcy court that the only contract at issue was pre-petition and that the defendants were obligated to perform work post-petition for free and are not entitled to recover payment for post-petition work they did. I think the bankruptcy court has the power under Section 329 to review post-petition work and find whether it's reasonable and the defendants have the ability to enforce their claim for post-petition work.
That's exactly what Judge Barley has found. But if that's true, then the same is true for pre-petition work. That's the basic problem, is it not?
I think that pre-petition fee, pre-petition work that's not paid pre-petition is discharged by the 18 enumerated exceptions to the stay and the 19 enumerated exceptions to the discharge.
But then the fee for post-petition work is also discharged. The debt in question here arises pre-petition. This is just one amount. It was liquidated pre-petition. There's one pre-petition debt. There's nothing in the bankruptcy code that makes anything turn on when the work was performed. It depends on when the debt was incurred.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I think that the debt is not incurred for post-petition work until the work is performed.
No, that's not the way retainer contracts are written. Retainer contracts say you owe this money unconditionally when we sign the contract. You owe it all right now, and I'm now going to perform the work as follows. You owe it even if I never perform the work. That's the way retainer contracts are designed. Now, was this a normal retainer contract? It looks like.
I think it was abnormal in the sense that it's a buy now, pay later bankruptcy plan, and there's most bankruptcy firms, and particularly those in the Ninth Circuit, are not doing, pay later bankruptcy plans. There no further.
If there had been a payment or a requirement for paying the filing fee in installments, presumably the attorney's fees could not have been collected until after the installments were completely paid, isn't that right?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
Well, there's a provision that the attorney's fees can't be collected as long as the filing fee is being collected in installments, isn't that correct?
Yes, 1006. I think what that applies to all bankruptcies, not just to Chapter 7s, and I think that bankruptcy attorneys who understand that their pre-petition fees are discharged will not do Chapter 7 bankruptcies for people who do not have $200 for the filing fee and have to pay it in installments, and that will mean that people who are paying the filing fee in installments will file pro se, or they will not pay in installments. They'll come up with the money beforehand so that they can have a fresh start after the bankruptcy rather than paying their attorney an installment plan after the discharge.
They'll pay the filing fee but not the attorney then.
I preserved the rest of my time for rebuttal, so if there are no other questions, I'd like to do that. Thank you.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the Court, Timothy Kelly for the appellees. Your Honor, I'd like to start out answering a couple of the questions that you posed to Mr. Bach. Judge Cudahy asked whether any of the fees in this case involved deferred payment of the filing fee. I believe that one of the three cases that were involved, specifically the one with Robert J. Adams and Associates Office, did involve a deferred payment under 28 U.S.C. Section 1930 and Bankruptcy Rule 1006. I'd also point out, in connection with Mr. Bach's answer to that question, that Mr. Bach indicated that Rule 1006 means that Chapter 7 debtors won't use deferred payment of the filing fees, but the deferred payment may be used in Chapter 11 or Chapter 13 cases. That, of course, stands reality on its head, because Chapter 7 is a liquidation for the poorest of the poor, whereas Chapter 11 and Chapter 13 both assume that the debtors have sufficient resources to reorganize and to pay some of those debts. And so that's exactly the reading of Rule 1006 that the court can't take. It makes no sense. Rule 1006 makes no sense unless Chapter 7 debtors are permitted to pay their attorneys 120 days after they filed the petition. And according to the Ninth Circuit, that's not permitted. I think that and Judge Easterbrook asked about the Ninth Circuit cases in the question, isn't the whole contract discharged? The fact of the matter is that
Bigger could easily be right, even though Hines is wrong.
Well, and Judge, we agree on that. Although the debtors here disagree. Bigger held that the entire contract, pre, post petition, regardless of when the work was conducted, was all discharged. Hines retreated from that position. Hines took the position that because of some doctrine of necessity or some distinction between pre- and post-petition claims, that that the normal rules of claims and bankruptcies do not operate, and therefore attorneys can be paid after the petition is filed. While we agree with the proposition that attorneys can be paid after the petition is filed, we think that the reason is not the doctrine of necessity or the distinction between pre- and post-petition claims. We think that the reason is Section 329 of the Bankruptcy Code, which treats debtors' attorney's fees as a class apart from other general creditors. 95 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court decided in Re Wood and Henderson and described the predecessor to Section 329 as sui generis, administrative in character, subject to proceedings both simple and summary, the attorney being an officer of the court. And that sui generis description has also been applied to Section 329. It's clear on a reading of old Section 60D and new Section 329 that Section 329 was derived from Section 60D. Sui generis means a class apart. And what is it apart from? Other than general creditors. Debtors' attorney's fees.
Well, my problem is that the way in which it's apart under 329 is that the judge reviews the reasonableness of the debt. And one might think that that's a review on top of, rather than instead of, the other provisions of the code.
Well, one might think that, Judge, except that if you look at the way that it operates in the real world, it would have to be a conflicting standard. If you discharge the fee, and under Bigger, you would have to discharge the entire fee, then the attorney and the debtor are not making an agreement for a reasonable fee. They're making an agreement for a reasonable fee minus whatever portion of the fee is discharged. And that is not what Congress intended. It's not what Congress said.
I have no idea what they intended, if they had anything whatsoever in their heads. What they said is hard enough. But you make a prediction about what follows from Bigger. A different kind of prediction is that if we follow Bigger, then part of the agreement, part of the filing package in these Chapter 7s, will be something rejecting the executory portion of the contract and making a new post-filing contract for attorney's fees, which would, of course, boost the lawyer's fees to administrative priority, and the district judge then would review that under Section 329 to see whether it was reasonable. Now, why doesn't that give effect to all of the provisions of the code?
Well, Judge, I think, first of all, I think that Hines says something a little different. It doesn't say that there's a new contract.
No.
It says that we'll recover.
Hines is just inventing things. Forget Hines. Right? If we follow Bigger and forget Hines, it seems to me one thing very likely that we would now see in filing packages by attorneys under Chapter 7 is a statement repudiating the executory portion of the retainer agreement and making a new agreement, post-bankruptcy, which would at that point have administrative priority because it's post-bankruptcy. And the district judge would then have to review that new agreement under Section 329 to see whether it was reasonable. Now, my question to you is why that doesn't give effect to all parts of the statute to achieve what we're supposed to do, which is carry out all parts of the statute.
Well, Judge, it doesn't give effect to Section 329 because Section 329 specifically governs fees paid or agreed to be paid for services rendered or to be rendered in contemplation of or in connection with the bankruptcy. So Section 329 already covers whether there's a necessity for a pre post-petition agreement or a post-petition agreement. It treats all of them as one agreement, one payment, one bankruptcy. The debtor's attorney's fees are treated as one subject matter under the code. The reason that that conflicts with the bankruptcy code is that it does not give the debtor, it doesn't give the attorney a right to reasonable compensation, which is a violation of Section 329, because the debtor could say after the filing of the petition, you know what, I'm not hiring this attorney. I'm not going to enter into another contract. It makes the subsequent contract voluntary on the part of the debtor. It releases the debtor from the original contract. And
any client always has an unconditional right to fire his lawyer for any reason the client wants, at any time the client chooses.
That's correct, Judge.
I assume if that's done, you know, even if we agree with Judge Barleon, if that is done on the first day of the bankruptcy or the second day, the district judge would then probably say under Section 329 that it would be unreasonable for the lawyer to collect the unearned portion of the retainer. Don't you think that's likely?
And Judge, I think that that's contrary to Section 329, because Section 329 gives effect to the debtor's access to counsel by allowing the debtor to make provision for counsel subject to the supervision of the court. It also creates an immediate conflict of interest between the debtor and the attorney upon the filing of the bankruptcy petition. Now you've got 535 people in Congress, at least 90% of whom are lawyers, and we're assuming now that
actually about a little less than a third are lawyers.
Really?
Yes.
A third then of Congress would not have recognized that they were creating a conflict of interest between the debtor and the attorney at the time, and that they would have silently overturned the long-standing practice of no money down bankruptcy filings with absolutely no legislative history to indicate that that's what they were doing or that that's what they were thinking about. In fact, what the legislative history says is that Congress was taking the approach of old Section 60D and applying that in Section 329 to all attorney's fees, all debtors' attorney's fees, pre- and post-petition, services rendered in contemplation of or in connection with, and that is the specific remedial statute that Congress enacted in connection with debtors' attorney's fees. And as this Court has said over and over again, if there's a specific substantive remedial statute that addresses a problem, you don't look to the general principles. Your Honor, I see that my time is up. If you have no further questions, I'll rest on my briefs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Bach, anything further?
I just wanted to take a quick opportunity to point out that we're not asking this court to follow Hines because we're not challenging post-petition services or fees. We're only...
But then you are asking us to follow Hines. Oh. You're asking us to discharge the fees for pre-petition services and to pay the fees for post-petition services. That's what Hines did on the basis of what the opinion conceded was extra statutory.
Right. I think the payment for the post-petition fees would come later. I don't think they've asserted any kind of counterclaim or anything, so I don't even know that there were post-petition services for any of these plaintiffs, and it wasn't alleged in our complaint.
Maybe this lawyer should have been fired.
If there were no post-petition services, then I should think that under Section 329 you could probably chisel down the fees without regard to anything else.
I mean, our position is that Section 329, the judge won't have to look at pre-petition fees at all because they're already discharged. He'll look at other things.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication that Congress intended to create an exception to discharge that allows these buy now, pay later installment plans for bankruptcies. Attorneys should collect upfront for their pre-petition work. There's no reason to favor attorney creditors over other creditors by allowing their claim to survive the petition while people who are providing other necessary things like groceries and gas and and that sort of thing, those claims are discharged pre-petition, as a result of the petition, rather. And Section 329 does not create any rights for attorneys, and it doesn't conflict with the discharge provisions, as we've pointed out in our brief. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.